Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast, a place to talk all things software and technology. I am Ben Popper, Director of Content here at Stack Overflow, joined as I often am by the illustrious Ryan Donovan, editor of our blog. Hi, Ryan.
What's news?
Today is a sponsored episode from the fine folks at Unity. And I would say we always ask people at the beginning of podcasts when the guests come on, tell us a little bit about your story. How'd you get into software and development? And the most common theme people will say is, well, I loved video games. Right. And I wanted to do XYZ in a video game. I wanted to mod it. I wanted to be, you know, make my own games. I wanted to run a forum. So that seems like it's been, you know, an entryway for, we've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people at this point, a lot of people to get into it. So today we're excited to have two great guests, Martin Best and Ryan Ellis from Unity On. And this is really exciting. We're going to be discussing some of the new features that they'll be releasing with Unity 6. And talking about them specifically kind of from the perspective of what was the pain point here in the developer workflow? How are you addressing them? And, you know, what does this do to improve sort of the process for someone who's creating games? So without further ado, Martin, Ryan, welcome to the Stack Overflow podcast.
Thank you, Ben. It's great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, Martin, I'll start quickly with you. Tell us a little bit about your background. What did you do to get into software and technology, and what brought you to the role you're at today at Unity?
Sure. So you kind of stole my thunder a little bit there with your intro, because my journey is very similar to what you described when I was a kid. You know, I started to learn to code and it felt like learning magic because you could make the machines do whatever you want. And of course, I wanted to go into games. And I'm one of those lucky folks that actually got to do it. But more than that, I also loved enabling folks to do it. So that's what eventually got me to Unity. Prior to working at Unity, I was at Mozilla, where I helped with a lot of Web3D technology like WebGL and WebAssembly, helping standardize those. And that's when I got to meet Unity. And when I was done with that mission, I thought, oh man, this is a company I need to work for. So, you know, that brought me to Unity. I've been here 7 years and it's been fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan, how about yourself?
Yeah, thanks. I lead product here at Unity and design for the Unity engine. And my earliest memories of getting into development were copying code out of books when I was a little kid to, you know, make my first video games way back when. I had a big passion for it then. I've had developer roles, but I've been leading product organizations for the last 25 or so years. And I've been at Unity for the last three. And prior to that, I was at Salesforce, where I helped to build their platform and ecosystem. And although it's a totally different space than the world of gaming, a lot of similarities in terms of working with developers, helping them to better understand our APIs and our services, large communities, really passionate people, and a large ecosystem around it that makes up the whole world in which we work. So a lot of fun working here at Unity, and all the people who are incredibly creative. Every day I see something that just brings a lot of joy. And I have two young kids, an 8-year-old and 6-year-old. And they definitely like dad's job this time. So
very cool. Very cool. Yeah. So I know one of the things that we wanted to chat about was that, you know, over time, games are getting more complex, a huge need for performance. And when you're thinking about building a game, you know, where do you sacrifice so it's not too heavy or dense with graphics? So one of the cooler things you're announcing that I'm sure will be interesting to developers is improving performance and boosting rendering speed.
Probably the biggest announcement, we have many things that contribute to performance, but one of the standouts is the GPU resident drawer. Basically, what this does is it takes, you know, a lot of games in Unity are CPU bound, meaning that their main bottleneck is CPU performance. So what the GPU resident drawer does is it takes a lot of that load and moves it to the GPU, which is fantastic. Once we have this in place, you can basically just turn it on for a lot of games, and we see anywhere from 1.5 to about 4x speed improvements, depending on how big of a bottleneck in this particular area you're facing. But it also is a foundation to other things. Once we have that data on the graphics card, we can then start to do other things like, you know, occlusion culling, which we do, and that adds more performance improvements as it cuts away things that are hidden behind other objects and reduces overdraw. And then we also have another new form of upscaler, which is called spatial temporal post-processing, or STP for short. And that's a very complicated word to say we have a cross-platform way of taking, you know, rendering a smaller image and then upscaling it to give you that awesome 4K kind of look.
So that'd be taking something that started out as a mobile game or just on a smaller format and upscaling it for someone who wants to play it on a home system?
Yeah, so this technology is designed for compute shader compliant hardware, meaning that, you know, it's higher end mobile and PC console and desktop. But if you switch this on and you're targeting that level of device, it just kind of works out of the box and you start to see benefits right away. So it's very cool in that way. So yeah, definitely that use case.
How does this affect somebody who's building these games? Like, obviously you said that the graphics are getting more complicated. There's more and more shaders, reflections, lighting, all these things, doing the math on the graphics. How does this make their lives easier?
So one of the things that we see a lot of the time is that people spend a lot of their effort around optimization in general. So they may come up with some sort of conception of the game, they do early stages of it, they do prototyping, and then they potentially have a long period of time where they're just optimizing. And you know, it doesn't really feel like they're getting as much value out of that, but they're trying to really reach their users wherever they are. It could be in sort of long tails of various platforms. And one of the things that we do, I think, so well at Unity is we try to make that accessibility to the broad range of users and the widest number of platforms just easily accessible to people. And so as Martin was saying, you can just effectively turn on these various capabilities and magically the engine will do the optimizations necessary for you across a wide range of these platforms. So many, many of our users who are part of our preview right now have, you know, expressed that, hey, I just turned this on and wow, I suddenly got back a whole bunch of, you know, my frame rate or things like that. And so it really just seems to work extremely well across a very wide range of types of games.
So Ryan, I want to pick up on something you said, which is right. Like, how do you enable folks to access the biggest audience or, you know, in a cross-platform way? Another thing that was talked about with Unity 6 was reaching players on mobile web browsers. So thinking about, you know, folks at a global scale. And Martin, I know you mentioned you had been in the browser game and worked on some graphics things there that sort of brought you to Unity. So maybe tell us a little bit about what you're announcing and how it enables folks to port stuff to the mobile web.
In general, we see that people are really interested in finding audiences in all sorts of new pockets. And one of the ways in which you do that is to go into new platforms. So it might be, for example, we have a partnership with Facebook around their Instant Games. That's effectively a mobile web platform. We also see other types of these types of platforms where people are wanting to, again, reach them. For example, in China, they're doing very similar sorts of things with WeChat. Also, you see people wanting to be able to get their games in front of people without having to have all of the weight of doing a download and installing all sorts of things. People want to try, you know, limited versions of the game, and acquiring that user is an important part of the step. And this is a place where, again, web and especially mobile web can really, really help accelerate that user acquisition process, make it incredibly lightweight. And then actually, we're also seeing just increasing interest in web games more broadly. We, for example, are doing a partnership with Crazy Games, one of the leading web game stores, and seeing really good traction with that. And also just an increasing number, especially oftentimes younger users who are interested in it.
I was just going to say, you know, it's interesting, you know, I'm a player of web games, but since the sort of end of Adobe Flash, seeing Unity rise to that and then seeing the sort of web game and also downloadable mobile, like the cross-platforming, I wonder if you can talk about like that sort of easy optimization, like how do you simplify that process so they don't have to have different low-poly models for the web version?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, there are things coming that will help with that specific issue, but we're not quite to the point where we're talking about that publicly. So, but I will tell you what we are talking about publicly that leads us down that road. Maybe that's the best way to answer it. So basically what we're seeing generally, just to build on what Ryan was hinting at, is there seems to be a conversion point coming where the browsers are now supporting all the things that we need. They're increasing the visual fidelity with web GPU, which we are including in Unity 6 is experimental. And really, we're just waiting for enough browsers to support it to take it out of that state. And then the other side is mobile. Mobile is getting faster. It's getting more capable. So suddenly, you don't need to optimize quite as much as you need to. You can get that load time faster, right? And so part of the thing is that the ecosystem is doing some of the work for us. So that's why we're ready now to say, hey, okay, we're going to give you official support. If you find bugs in this area, we're going to, you know, fix them, and we're all on top of it. In addition to that, we're also working on things like code stripping, how to get things down in size. We also have a slew of best practices that you can read up on that we use to optimize a bunch of games for Meta Facebook Instant Apps. They gave us some games to look at, and we've helped them optimize them and really, really reduce those load times. Most of the web is about how do you load the games quickly? And what we're seeing is we're starting to hit tipping points where these richer games can actually make sense on modern networks and all that kind of jazz. So that's what's kind of driving all of our enthusiasm around this and what made us decide to change our stance on that in this particular version. Maybe that answers the question. Then, of course, we will continue to invest in making it easier to, you know, optimize and more code stripping and all this kind of stuff to get the size smaller and smaller.
The one thing I'll add also to that is that while we certainly see these use cases in gaming and it's becoming of increasing interest, it's actually also very popular with our non-gaming customers, people who are building various, you know, industrial apps and want to be able to share those inside of their company or, you know, collaborate with other partners of theirs or things like that. Web is often a better way to deploy those types of applications because it's just fast and lightweight. I just share a link with you and we're off to the races instead of having to install some big heavyweight thing.
Yeah, recently I got some solar panels put on my house, you know, and now they'll do a thing where, oh, they look at a satellite picture and then, you know, street view image. And then the guy shows up and he's like, well, we made a 3D rendering of your house and just want to show you, you know, how much light you'd be getting and stuff like that. Is that an example? Or, you know, I can imagine obviously an architecture or whatever, but right.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect example. Other ones are things like, you know, if you wanted to buy a new car or like a new fancy watch or something like that, you might go on the website and have a configurator where you're spinning it around and changing its colors and opening the doors up and all those kinds of things. That is oftentimes Unity as well.
And we also see a lot of use cases where people just want to share with each other. In fact, it's often surprising to people that the web is the fourth most built platform in Unity, but not always only focused on selling games, but also just sharing content or sharing things that you're working on or what have you. So very, very used in a lot of different ways.
So I know a lot of games today, they're all multiplayer. And from what I've understood from some games that building multiplayer in later is a lot harder. It's a sort of significant and like fundamental lift to build the game as multiplayer. I know you're adding some features to make multiplayer a little easier. Can you talk about those?
The first thing is that we survey our customers, our users every year and ask them about their interests and how gaming is shifting for them as an example. And every year we actually see a larger and larger number of them focusing on multiplayer. And the reasons are pretty obvious. Like these multiplayer games in general, they perform better. They have higher engagement with users. They're usually longer lasting. They monetize better, all the things. And so there is a really, really big increase in interest in multiplayer. But you're right, building multiplayer games can be kind of hard and oftentimes require some specialized skills. And also, depending upon the type of multiplayer game you're making, you know, whether or not it's sort of an MMO or is it a smaller like turn-based game, the technologies that you're going to use and strategies that you're going to use can be very different. And so what we've done on our side is that we've introduced a new feature with Unity 6, which is called the Multiplayer Center. And really what that does is it allows you to answer some fairly simple, you know, straightforward human language questions about what you're trying to do. And in that process, it will then recommend back to you effectively a certain set of settings or services that we have. And then you can tweak them and say, you know, I want to change this one or change that one, and then just turn it all on. And it will install all of the necessary code and configure it for you so you can be off to the races. This is a really great way for people to be able to especially prototype those games much more rapidly as they're trying to tweak them and get a better sense of what the right, you know, feeling and gameplay is like. And so that's a big enhancement that we've done in the space of multiplayer. But we've also done some other things. Martin, you want to talk a little bit about some of those?
Sure. So with earlier versions of Unity, like Unity 22, we added a lot of low-level stack to Unity, but it was hard to test within the editor. And so we wanted to make it easier to experiment and validate. So in Unity 6, we've added in the ability to actually run multiplayer games right in the editor and hitting play and it launching multiple clients that can talk to each other or client server configurations that you can set up so that you can have that ease of use and super fast testing. So the other thing that we're also introducing is a new paradigm for helping people build more resilient client-to-client games. And we have this new paradigm called distributed authority. And what that does is it allows you to have multiple clients owning different parts of the simulation. And then what that does is it distributes the load, but it also makes sure that, you know, you can do either client to client or client server style configurations using this. It helps us make much, much more intensive simulations.
So does that mean you can have a multiplayer game without a sort of central server that you're talking to?
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah, so co-op games, which are pretty popular in Unity games, for example, can definitely take advantage of this with all the clients talking to each other.
Martin, when we first met before we hopped on this podcast, you told me a story about the bad old days of trying to create multiplayer. We had to like set it up on two different machines and then try to play both of them at the same time and predict. Can you just walk me through it again? Because I thought that was a really neat anecdote.
Well, this happens in 22 right now, where you set up one, you figure out the IP address for the other, and then you got to, you know, get the ports all set up, and then you trigger that so that they talk to each other, and you got to first hit play on one and then hit play on the other, like you would with a client server game, right? You know, awesome user experience. So we heard loud and clear that we should improve that. And so Unity 6 is going to deliver on that. So.
Very cool.
I mean, just at a higher level, I mean, we're really excited about the launch of Unity 6. It's going to be shipping tomorrow, so people are going to be able to access and download it. We've already seen a lot of great adoption during the preview period. We've got great feedback from our users throughout that, have done a lot of work hardening and fixing various bugs to get it to be a battle-tested state. And we're just so excited to see what people are going to do tomorrow when it launches and be by their side and partnership with them and helping them ship their great games and potentially upgrade some of their existing ones to our newest version.
Yeah, and I'll also add that, on this one's near and dear to my heart because I was the main PM overseeing it. And I have to say, we covered some of the, you know, really, really high standout features for sure, but there is so much packed into this release for pretty much all of our developers, regardless of what you're working on. And so really encourage people to check it out. It's something we're all very, very proud of and can't wait to see what you do with it.
Can you give folks a sense of the scale here? Martin, you're saying this is the first one that was sort of your baby. Where you oversaw the project. How many people are involved in creating this? You know, how long does it take to go from like start to finish? And I know you mentioned also that, you know, you have lots of beta testers who are out there helping you harden it up before the release. So can you give us some sense of scale of what it takes to get Unity to its newest version?
Sure. So Unity 6, actually, we started working on it all the way back when early 2023. We started to hatch the plans for it even before that, probably by about 6 months. It's now the end of 2024, so it's a good long while. It takes about 2 years for us to get one of these out. With that said, there's, of course, the engine team, which is, you know, somewhere in the ballpark of about 1,000 people. So it's quite a big effort. And at some point, most of those folks touch any version we put out. And that ranges from everything from doc writers to QA people to the engineers that work on it to the, you know, amazing people in our graphics team and our tool makers and everything outside of that. And I'm not even counting all the wonderful people that help us with marketing and, you know, all the other things. So there's even a larger org that does that. So, you know, shipping Unity and keeping all of this running is just a massive effort. And of course, we couldn't do it without all the players and creators out there that are constantly sending in bugs and giving us feedback and all that kind of jazz along the way. And of course, making all this possible by making really cool stuff that continues to fuel the machine. So, you know, very, very long and big effort.
So it is that time of the show. We like to shout out someone who came on Stack Overflow and asked a question or provided an answer. One of our users 4 hours ago, their character is floating in the air when the death animation is played in Unity. Not what they're looking for. They need a solution. I'm sure somebody will come along and help them fix that floating death animation. I am Ben Popper. I am the director of content here at Stack Overflow. You can always find me on X at Ben Popper. If you want to come on the show or give some suggestions for topics, hit us up, podcast at Stack Overflow with an email. And if you like today's program, leave us a rating and a review.
I'm Ryan Donovan. I edit the blog here at Stack Overflow. You can find it at stackoverflow.blog. And if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Okay, I'm Martin Best. I work at Unity as the product architect and oversaw Unity 6, which you can find more about at unity.com.
And I'm Ryan Ellis. I lead product and design for the Unity Engine. You can find me at Ryan P. Ellis on X. Look forward to connecting with all of you.